Well, like a lot of these, it's a little hard to just put it in fit into an exact peg there. But no, Vic was well. What would you like to know?
Well, tell me how you knew him.
Well, I got to know him through politics and business. He was on the Equitable Savings Board of Directors.
Mm-hmm.
I was there too.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't remember when particularly I got to know him. I just knew him, and then later got to know him better. I think of, well, I can think of some interesting things that you might be interested in. When he, the year he was elected governor,
mm-hmm.
in the primary, it was Roger Martin, Tom McCall, and Vic.
Yeah.
And the conventional thinking was that Vic and Roger would knock each other off and Tom would come in
mm-hmm.
and win.
Mm-hmm.
That was the conventional thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So Vic and Roger convened a jury. Mm-hmm. Have you heard this story?
I've heard versions of this story.
Okay.
All versions are good.
Well, I was there.
Oh, good. Even better.
So they selected a jury,
uh-huh.
which consisted of Hal Lapling, John Mason, and me.
Uh-huh.
And our job was to interview both of them. You know, I think there was even a time limit. And then make a recommendation as to which should drop out.
Mm-hmm.
Non-binding, of course.
Yeah. Yeah.
But this is our recommendation. And so I think somewhat reluctantly, all three of us took mm-hmm. it on. And, of course, you know who Hal Lapling was. John mm-hmm. Mason was very active in Republican politics. He had been Nixon's campaign manager in 72, I think, or maybe 68, I guess. But in any event, so we met. We interviewed Roger. Roger had a campaign chairman in all the counties. He was very, very well organized.
Mm-hmm.
Vic wasn't organized at all.
Mm-hmm.
He came in, he just said, well, talked about his, you know, philosophy. He was friends, and he's going to get things going and all. And so our recommendation was that Vic drop out.
Mm-hmm.
And which he didn't take. And he told us, well, I'm not going to take your guys. I still think I can do it. And, of course, I think that, again, the conventional thinking was, well, they'll knock each other off. But of course, what happened is that Roger, who was a relative conservative, but he and Tom sort of split the liberal vote.
Yeah.
And Vic came in with a surprisingly strong conservative vote to win. And I always said he got even with me. He appointed me to LCDC when, as my dad said at the time, he said, those guys go around in armored cars,
yeah.
which is almost true. They have cops guarding us all the time.
Yeah.
It was so controversial. But I was then in Vic's administration. He would call on me and count me for different things. Let me first say about LCDC. At the time, this was extremely controversial. They were making very significant decisions.
Were you appointed right at the beginning of his term?
Pretty early.
Okay.
No, it was in a bit, because it was by the time he had Lee Johnson on as his chief of staff.
That's the beginning.
It was pretty early. Yeah. I guess maybe Lee was even the first.
Yeah.
Because Lee and I were good friends, and Vic, uh-huh. Vic talked to me a lot about Lee.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, all you have to do is get Lee to understand that you're the governor.
Mm-hmm.
And more than once during their relationship, Vic would call me and say, would you please tell Lee that I'm the governor? And so I would tell Lee, I don't know if it went over. I don't even really sunk in, because Lee was just a take charge kind of guy.
Yeah.
But in any event, so he put me on there. And I was on there for 4 years, as I say, at a very highly controversial time. He called me, and I was viewed as, this is the governor's guy on LCDC. And basically, if Faust says this, well, this is the governor saying mm-hmm. this. A lot of people thought that. Mm-hmm. Well, I only heard from him twice. And both times he called me on matters where people who had helped him were concerned, and they wondered if he could do anything with me.
Mm-hmm.
So Vic called me, and after saying it five times that he wanted me to follow the law, do what I was supposed to do, he said, I just appreciate it if you could just listen to these guys. He said, just listen to them.
Mm-hmm.
He said, but then again, he went back, but make this very clear, Jack. He I'm not telling you or asking you how to vote on this. Mm-hmm. He said, I don't know how it is. He said, you will apply the law. And you just need, you know. So I said, sure, I can do that. And as I recall, one time I voted with him, and another time I voted against him. But both times it was really clear to me that Vic meant that.
Yeah, yeah.
He wasn't telling me how to vote. He wasn't asking me how to vote.
Yeah.
And that's the only two times he ever discussed LCD business with me. With all these different controversial things that came up, he let me at it. So he was very, very good, about that. Another thing that I advised him on was judicial appointments.
Uh-huh.
And at one time I told him, I said, you know, you should have someone on the Supreme Court with a private practice background.
Mm-hmm.
I said, instead of everybody coming up through government, I said, mm-hmm. somebody who understands, you know, has a broader and a different viewpoint. And then all of a sudden, somebody went off the court, I don't remember who it was, suddenly somebody resigned from the Supreme Court or died or whatever, but we had a vacancy come up. Well, first I should back up and say that one day Ed Peterson, who was a lawyer who I dealt with, he was a law school, a year ahead of me in law school, we're tennis teammates, good friend, Ed came to me and said he'd be interested in being on the court,
mm-hmm.
and an appellate court. And we chatted, and I said, well, Ed'll keep that in mind. And I thought, well, he would be an excellent appointment.
Mm-hmm.
So then came this sudden, unexpected vacancy. And so Vic called me and said, okay, here's your guy. Tell me, who do you want?
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, well, I've got one for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I said, Ed Peterson. So I said, send him down to talk to me. So Ed came down, talked, and they had a good chat. And Ed was appointed, went on to become Chief Justice of the Oregon Supreme Court. And Vic never asked him what party he was in.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't either. In fact, I still don't know what party he was in. I'm kind of guessing he was a Republican for, you know, from knowing him.
Yeah.
But nobody ever asked.
Yeah.
And Vic met with him, chatted with him. He'd never met him before, and had a good conversation, said, okay, appointed him. And later on one time, sometime years later, Vic mentioned me, he says, you know, he said, that was a good appointment. He said, I'm really mm-hmm. pleased the way that turned out. He said, he's been, you know, quite a success on the court.
Yeah.
I said, that's right.
Yeah. Were you around when the Betty Roberts appointment took place?
No.
Okay.
No. No, I don't remember that. I remember, I don't remember her appointment. I remember talking to to Herb Schwab, who was the mm-hmm. chief judge, about her.
Mm-hmm.
But he used to call me from time to time. In fact, I was his lawyer. That has nothing to do with your book. But in any event, I think Vic was nonpartisan, tried to be, and he was open to different ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, like that appointment, you know, a lot of people, well, boy, they're going to repay somebody who did him a favor.
Mm-hmm.
Hell, he didn't know who the hell, he didn't know who Ed Peterson was.
Yeah.
But he was impressed, and it was turned out to be a good appointment. That's,
On LCDC, one of the things that Lee Johnson really pushed through that's worked pretty well is LUBA.
Oh, yeah.
Were you involved in talking about that or just watching it come at you?
No, LUBA was there.
Okay.
Yeah, LUBA was there and operating, or it came into operation. And, yes, it worked very well because the idea behind that, as you know, was so people wouldn't be tied up for years.
Yeah.
And I think the process has been weakened. I thought it was a very good process in that... all the positive things in there, good planning,
mm-hmm.
you know, for things such as mass transit, etc. You know, mass transit in Bryanville. But I mean, everybody had to consider the nine mm-hmm. goals to the extent they were applicable. But it meant then too, if you had some place that was set up for, say, industrial use,
mm-hmm.
that an industrial user could come in, and if they got the permit process, they weren't going to be tied up for years with litigation.
Yeah.
And they could tell them that. They'd say, look, when they're trying to bring in business, they could say, look, if you get this, you're going to be able to move in good time.
Mm-hmm. So you had a strong sense. When Vic talks about land use, he saw it as one and the same as going overseas to get business. He saw it as part of making a rational, easy way for business
investment
to take place.
Very much so. He liked being able to tell people that we have a rational system there. Mm-hmm. It's not a system of who could you bribe and who do you know.
Mm-hmm.
We have a rational system, mm-hmm. and you can find, and you're not going to get tied up for years in litigation.
Okay.
And he was right.
Yeah.
Because at the time when he came in, Oregon was in desperate shape. During his term, I should say, there was a real nationwide recession.
Yeah.
And we participated.
Yeah.
And so he was very much for getting good business. I remember one story about one time. He went to Japan, and as soon as he got off the plane, they said, "We understand you like to play golf." Yes. Okay, let's go. So they took him off to go to play golf, and he said he got to about the fifth hole or so. He said, "I just hated to do it." He said, "God, I was woozy." And I finally said to him, "I'm terribly sorry.
Yeah.
I've got to go to bed." And so they took him away, but he worked at it. He felt that we needed to bring business in. I think he was instrumental in the Silicon Forest, mm-hmm. What we've had out there. Mm-hmm. But, no, he was a good guy, and you know, one of the things he always, because he asked me about Lee, and I gave Lee Lee Johnson,
mm-hmm.
A good boost and endorsement, because Lee was a very bright guy, and this tells you some of Vic's appointments there. Lee was a very bright guy. Lee was Attorney General for 8 years,
mm-hmm.
and I would say I was one of his very closest advisors, or somebody he bounced things off.
Yeah.
And in 8 years, we discussed all sorts of things. I remember mining and the sisters and all this and that, where there were policy things involved. And I can swear in a Bible, or whatever, my mother's grave, that never once did politics come up with Lee. Mm-hmm. Never anything about polls or politics, ever. Mm-hmm. It was always on, if politics would come in, they said, "Can we get this through? You know,
right.
How's this going to work? You know, the practical politics of it." But as for his personal politics, polls or anything like that, never came up. It was always, "How can we do the right thing?" And that was largely the ethic of the time. You know, like Jim Redden will,
mm-hmm.
will tell you that Jim Redden, who worked around that same time, would say that these people considered themselves friends. The parts and stuff, don't get me wrong, was there, but always in the end they were trying to work out something out.
Yeah.
I remember one time, just an illustration of the times, Jim Redden was taking the Democratic position on something and Lee the Republican. When they were both in the legislature, mm-hmm. I was down there, and they were jointly writing out their press conference statements. Okay, you say this, and I'll say they're laughing about it.
Right.
Then they'd go out and get in front of the microphones and say, "Oh, they're Democrats this and the Republicans that." And they'd be out there giving each other hell while they're back there. They're trying to work it out,
mm-hmm.
as to how to get this thing through.
Mm-hmm.
So that was Vic's time, and Vic was well cast in that mm-hmm. time with those people.
Mm-hmm. In people have talked about the 1979 session, his first session as governor, as kind of the apogee of Oregon's economy, and by the end of that year, Paul Volcker's raised interest rates through the roof, and things fall apart. But in that 79 session, they come up with the kicker, and they also give back millions, hundreds of millions of dollars to the taxpayers. Do you see Vic's pragmatism as the driving force in, for instance, he wasn't a big kicker fan, but he signed, well, I'm not sure he signed off on it, but it may have come into without his signature. But it was, you know, he didn't want to stand in the way of things. He'd also run in that 78 campaign. There was Measure 6 and Measure 11, I think. But Measure 6 was the 1.5% property tax.
Oh, yeah.
And then the other one was the legislative version. And both of them failed.
Yeah,
but
it passes Measure 5 later.
Yeah, later on it passes as Measure 5.
Yeah,
but you see that pragmatism when you get to dealing with taxes and things like that?
Yeah, I think that Vic was not an ideologue.
Mm-hmm.
He tended toward the conservative by his nature. He was business background, you know, family,
mm-hmm.
family and business. But Vic was a pragmatist, and I think that he always felt that his legacy would be in getting things done rather than in, like, say, like Ronald Reagan, where he changed the political dynamic,
mm-hmm.
Or Roosevelt. He always felt that his legacy would be in getting things done. So he was very practical, and just about anything you can say that Vic did, and I just can't purport to be an expert on everything he did, but almost everything that Vic did, you would say that was driven by pragmatism rather than any ideology,
mm-hmm.
conservative or liberal or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and as I say again, like LCDC, that would have been a perfect time for a real, let's say, like a strong business-oriented conservative to have made, in his place, to have made quite a difference,
yeah.
in how the whole thing was put into place. And Vic just let us do our jobs.
Mm-hmm. Later on, do you see that same pragmatism when he comes up with the sales tax plan as part of that tax reform in 85?
Well, I think that everybody, I'd have to say that everybody I see in Oregon politics who favors a sales tax does so for pragmatic reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any partisan.
Mm-hmm.
There may have developed now, but I think that it's always been an idea. People look at it and say, we have to have the three legs.
Yeah.
I think that's been pretty much a bipartisan feeling. And then they run up against the will of the
voters. The reality of the electorate. Yeah.
And the most pragmatic thing is, don't waste your money on,
right.
on it.
Right.
And your time, because the voters just turn it down.
Yeah.
But they've had, you know, the very good plan. You know, they've really worked at it. Well, one illustration, I think, of the pragmatism of, like the McCall plan, what Vic had, was all the exceptions were made not from the standpoint of any particular political ideology, like
mm-hmm.
this is a Republican idea, this is a Democrat. They were all made with the idea of getting it passed.
Mm-hmm.
All those, and that's mm-hmm. what they were pulled, and the pulls that came in were how the voters did this, how the voters did that, and so that all the different exceptions, the various plans that were offered, always those exceptions were based on getting it passed.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny when you're talking about partisan and nonpartisan. I was talking to Wally Carson. He said one of the biggest eye-opening experiences he had was going to Olympia when he was in the legislature.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, what Republicans felt was true here was exactly the opposite of what they felt.
So yeah.
I never realized the Columbia River was such a powerful
yeah.
force.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's true. And I think I never thought about that, but that's a good point you raise about the sales tax. And as I say, the whole idea, all those polls and everything is get it passed,
mm-hmm.
whatever I have to do to get it passed.
Mm-hmm.
And it would do well in early polling, and then it just got worse and worse.
Yeah.
Very easy thing to oppose.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And it seems to average 30% of the electorate likes it in an election.
When it comes down to it.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And during the hard times again, everything that Vic was doing there was the idea of getting people back to work, getting
mm-hmm.
the economy going.
Mm-hmm.
And as well, you know, it's limited what a governor can do. We
yeah.
are basically the national economy drives us, but there are differences.
Yeah.
And you want to do what you can.
Yeah. I talked to someone last week who was on one of the international trade trips when Oregon signed its sister state relationship with Fujian province. Mm-hmm. And he was saying that the biggest eye-opening that he saw was the Chinese realizing that as governor, Vic simply couldn't tell Intel to do something.
Oh,
and, you know, whereas in China, you can.
Yeah.
The political side can tell Intel what to do.
Yeah.
And the Chinese just had no idea in 1984. And so that, and also discovering that while Oregon was the same size as Fujian province, Oregon had 3 million people and Fujian province had 30 million people.
Yeah.
A little different.
Yeah. No, they also have difficulties understanding they really don't believe our freedom of speech.
Yeah.
They still think, and the Russians were the same. I talked one time to Andrei Andropov, who was, I think that was his name. He was the leading Americanologist for Russia at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe Hobb brought him over here.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to me, we're talking about, he said, all these demonstrations. He said, your government, he says, they can stop those when they feel like it. He said, they can control them when they feel it isn't going, they're not going along government policy.
Mm-hmm.
I said, tell that to Lyndon Johnson. You know, but I think he believed it.
Yeah.
But no, Vic found himself, as they all do, dealing with very different cultures.
Mm-hmm.
I would give Vic credit. When he went over to deal with the Japanese, he wore a suit and tie.
Yeah.
You know, you put on shorts or boots, something like that, and it's offensive.
Yeah.
It's a slap in the face to them.
Yeah, exactly. So were you talking with Lee Johnson when he comes to the end of his time as chief of staff?
Yes.
And so what was his thinking? I haven't gone into the files themselves, but it's pretty clear that, I mean, he goes to the 79 session, the 81 session, and by the end of the summer of 81, July of 81, he's applying to be the head of BPA. And by fall, by September, he's out and Jerry Thompson is in.
Uh-huh.
Did you get a sense of when he felt that it was time for him to look for something else to do?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, the relationship with Lee and Vic was never a buddy-buddy one.
Mm-hmm.
Vic was sort of like a smile and a shake of the head from uh-huh. Lee. You know, that still, I see Vic every so often for the rest of his life, and he often just still shake his head about Lee with the idea of, would you please tell him I'm the governor? And that was it wasn't a clash over policies. It wasn't a clash over principles or anything like that. It was just that Lee could not resist going out and saying, well, we'll do this. Like uh-huh. he was talking to one of the legislators, key legislators. Okay, here's what we'll do.
Yeah.
You know, then he'd come back and he'd say, now, Vic, I told him, and Vic said, Lee, you know, I'm the governor. You don't promise them things.
Right.
And he said, you don't go making deals, you know, like this. It was probably, as I say, to the end of his life, Vic would chuckle about that. He'd say, yes, he said, you were my conduit to Lee, saying, please tell him again who's the governor.
Mm-hmm.
Lee never could quite get it. He was a person of action, and Vic wanted to get things done. Lee wanted to get things done, and so that was really it. It was that style differential that led to Lee, and he put Lee appointed to the court.
Yeah. I was talking with Pat Amadeo a couple of weeks ago. And she was saying at one point Vic forbade any department heads from testifying about any budget numbers except the ones that he wanted.
Yeah.
And she, because she did natural resources, she sat there. Mike Thorne kept her for 7 hours in the witness chair.
Oh.
And she said, it was on closed circuit. The governor could look any time and see I was doing exactly what he said. It was a long 7 hours. And it's the same thing. It's you know, I'm the governor.
Yeah.
You know, it's not your job to do dickery.
That's right.
My job.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I went in to be confirmed and reconfirmed at LCDC. Well, you know, another thing that I didn't realize, too, was, you know, normally, I think it's so like, it's, I know it's a tradition with the United States, that if you're appointed to a cabinet position, mm-hmm. The first thing you do is you go in and meet with the president and get your marching orders.
Mm-hmm.
And for high appointments, you go and meet with the president and get your marching orders. And that didn't take place with Vic. He just, my marching orders were to do your job.
Mm-hmm.
And there was none of this about here's what my policies are, here's what I want done. He never told me what he wanted done.
Mm-hmm.
He respected the process, he liked the process, and he didn't want to put his fingerprints on it. He just wanted it to work.
Mm-hmm. That's great. It fits really well with Wally Carson, who appointed to the Supreme Court, his first major decision was deciding on the safe rate.
Mm-hmm.
And he decided against it. And, you know, he thought about it. He said, boy, if this were the old days, I would call Vic up and talk about this, but I'm the Supreme Court, I can't do that. But I'm here because he wants us to think.
Mm-hmm. That's
and
right.
I thought, and I said, no, you can't do the safe rate. And, you know, it got turned down.
His main things he did in this interview with Ed Peterson, as I understand from Vic, Vic had the feeling about Ed that he was bright and that he was honest,
mm-hmm.
and that he understood the law, and not the books and all that. He understood, well, he didn't understand a lot of that about that, but he understood how things work with the
yeah.
law.
Yeah.
He had good experience, trial court, advising businesses,
yeah.
advising people, you know, and that he felt that he had the tools, but there was none of this about, I want this done, I want that done.
Mm-hmm. When you would advise Vic on those judicial appointments, would you go straight to him? Would you talk with Shirley Woodward?
I answered his phone call, and I returned his call, 378-3111.
Okay.
I did not intrude if I wasn't asked for.
Okay.
Vic
would call and
Vic
ask.
Would call, and he said, what about this person?
Yeah.
And I'd let him know. And he would listen. And then, but he would call, and he called about a number of them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a curse being in that position because you've got a whole lot of people who want to take you out to lunch.
Yeah, exactly.
And it really is.
Yeah.
And
once
like,
it's known, then you're, yeah.
Yeah. And Ed Peterson said a banquet some years later, and he said, people asked me how I got to the Supreme Court. He said, well, he said, I knew Jack Faust, that's how. I thought, thank God he didn't say that when Vic was still in office. I got even then, but you know, still some people would call and all thought I was still a kingmaker. But
yeah.
Vic, he wanted honesty, and he admired. There were a lot of people he dealt with. He admired a lot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes he would, make appointments on the basis of knowing somebody that he really admired. But
mm-hmm.
ideologue would be the last word.
Yeah. How did you see Vic working with the other major players? So that's mainly Packwood and Hatfield. But you know, we have Northwest Power Planning, so he's playing with Dixie Lee Ray, and you know, so at that national level. I mean, you know, this stuff here. I find this fascinating. Reagan is the one who let him fly on Air Force One, but he was his least favorite. He was a big Ford guy with Bush number two.
Well, you know, one thing with Reagan, I get my timing right on this. Vic, as you know, he's Arab,
mm-hmm.
half
mm-hmm.
descent. And he went to, when he was governor, he met with Assad.
Yeah.
The elder, of course.
Yeah.
And they met, and Vic told me that Assad, because Assad is, you've got an Arab governor, you know.
Yeah.
Assad understood that that was something significant.
Yeah.
And I believe the first.
First Arab American, second is John Sununu, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Who, of course, goes and becomes chief of staff.
Yeah, there we go. But Vic met with him, and Vic said, talked to him about the permanent clash between the Arab world and Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And so Vic talked to him about that, and Assad, and Vic said, well, you know, just if you can, you know, talk to the people, and Vic said, I'd urge you to talk to our people. And Assad said, I would be happy to, and talk to Israel. He said, I would be happy to meet with Israel,
mm-hmm.
he said, with the U.S. at the table as an impartial body bringing us together. He said, but my feeling is that when I meet with the people, that it's Israel and the U.S. on the other side of the table and me on this side. And he said, I'm not a whole lot interested in that. He said, it isn't very encouraging. And he said, but if I could have a session with them where I was assured that the U.S. was a facilitator and not a party, I knew it. Mm-hmm. So Vic came back. That was how Vic mm-hmm. reported what Assad said. That's what he reported to me. So Vic came back, and he called, and he made calls and approaches to State Department and to the White House, and never heard back. Mm-hmm. They had no, they didn't want to talk to me about it. And Vic was very offended at that. Mm-hmm. He thought, here I am, I've kind of stuck my neck out, and I've given you sort of an access to Syria mm-hmm. that you don't otherwise have. And I've offered to use to be of assistance in this, and I didn't even get a return call.
Yeah.
That really annoyed him.
Mm-hmm. Relationships with Packwood and Hatfield?
Well, they, I don't recall, you know, I never, of course, I was very close to Bob, and I don't recall any real friction.
Okay.
I'm not saying there wasn't any, but I can't recall any circumstance where they would be, one would be griping to me about the other.
Mm-hmm.
So I just, as I say, maybe I don't remember. I don't recall.
Yeah. I mean, it's finding things where they work together. It's you know, there's all sorts of weird things that happen there. But it's like Northwest Power Planting, Columbia Gorge, mm-hmm. That kind of stuff. You know, Packwood became a national politician, so he was involved in those things just obliquely. But Hatfield was kind of the one with his fingers in all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and also. Hatfield, of course, in his time on appropriations,
mm-hmm.
you know, I've said to Bob that the best kind of thing you can do for your state, it really isn't much good politically unless you can pose for a picture in front of it.
Yeah.
And Hatfields were that way. And somebody once said, well, what's the best thing what's something that Packwood has done for Oregon? It just popped into my mind. I said, you know, if you look at the 1986 TRA, we still can deduct our property taxes and our income taxes, but nobody else can deduct their sales tax. You know, all the other states are picking up that burden
right.
for us,
right.
and that's one thing he did for us, but you can't post for a picture in front
exactly.
of it.
Exactly.
So, but no, I don't recall any problems there. But, you know, those situations, those relationships are always complicated by staffs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you'll find very often the difficulties between like two senators or maybe a senator with the governor will yeah. often come out of that because so much is done by staff.
Mm-hmm.
And the staffs oftentimes will get crosswise on something. And I found that really to be, over the years, to be a frequent cause of problems between the two offices that started at the staff level.
Yeah.
And of course they're all, you know, in politics, you know, they all have egos, they all have concerns, they're all worried about their polls.
Mm-hmm.
And so those are not easy relationships. It isn't very easy just to walk into office and go up to the other senator or the governor and say, hi, let's be friends.
Right.
It's not as easy as it would be for two ordinary people.
Yeah. The role of governor, role of senator, in the day that Vic was inaugurated, his first time, a little girl was in the office, and she was so thrilled to meet him, wanted his signature, and he asked her, so what do you think I do? And she said, well, you're the governor of the state, you're the most important person, and he took the time to say, actually, I'm just a person that happens to be holding this job. You know, this is the signature from the job, basically. Trying to keep that separate, and you can't. But trying to make that different.
Oh yeah, but they all have their concerns with re-election.
Mm-hmm.
I think Vic found it a little tough in his second term to be in a situation where he wasn't up for re-election. He'd been that way for so many years in politics. And it was a different situation. And of course, there's always some of the lame duck thing, as mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. comes into it. There's that you can't get around. Mm-hmm. And then you go out of office, and he used the old line. He said, "Well," he says, "it's just like being dead. He said, your hair still grows, your fingernails still grow, but the phone doesn't ring anymore.
Exactly. Were you at his memorial service in Salem?
No.
His son, Tom, used one of Vic's favorite ways of talking about that. It said, one day you're the peacock, and next day you're the feather duster.
Yeah. That.
And Vic's way of talking about it was really funny. He would hold up his fishing licenses. For 8 years, he was fishing license 000001.
Oh.
And then in 1979, he was fishing license, whatever it was,
3,500. Yeah. That's good. I like this.
It's like, well, there we go.
That's good. Yeah, you're down. No, he found it. He would be a consultant and all that, but that really didn't excite him that much as having the reins of power slip away.
It's funny, it made it so that he felt more comfortable playing golf in Asia. He was very conscious as governor that he didn't necessarily want pictures of him playing golf all over the place. So he would occasionally, but when he became a consultant, it's golf all the time.
Yeah.
Golf all the time.
Oh, yeah. So he stayed, he was a regular attender. We have an organization, as you probably heard of, Roger Martin organization, mm-hmm. calls it the Old Timers.
Yeah.
He would come to that. And
yeah.
One of the constant themes of the people there is how different it is and how well they got along. And and they were friends.
Yeah.
Wendell Wyatt, and Edith Green have name down there in the building. They were close friends, worked together. And Wendell Wyatt and Bob Duncan, Wendell brought Bob Duncan into our law firm.
Yeah.
They were very close personal friends. Yeah. Wendell was over there fading away. Bob Duncan, once a week, Bob would show up. Showed up when he was walking with a cane. Showed up when he was walking with two canes once a week to visit Wendell.
Yeah.
Will that happen again?
Yeah. No. No. Exactly.
Yeah.
So any other things about Vic?
Well, if... give me your card, and if I think of anything, okay. I will call you. But those are most of the things. You know, when anybody asks me about Vic, the first thing I tell is about the LCDC experience.
Yeah.
Because I think that is so unusual. And, of course, and you have to understand, again, how contentious it was at the time and how much more was at stake when we were getting these comprehensive plans approved by all these jurisdictions to know that we were down there free to do what we thought was right without the governor leaning on us.
He looked at that, and that was, you know, basically the first 2 years of his governorship, just... Mm-hmm. Leaning on those counties and cities.
Yeah.
Get it done.
Yeah. And I must say, too, he was getting calls all the time.
Mm-hmm.
He was getting calls from local government people, getting calls from business people, screaming at him all the time about do something about this damn LCDC.
Mm-hmm.
Do something about it. What he did about it was let us do our job, because he believed in the process. He thought it was a good bill, and he wasn't going to lean on us.
Yeah.
And he took the heat. He took the heat. Counties where we put on enforcement orders on local governments, you know, they're calling the governor, do something about that. He wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
That was the process.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Great. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much.
Okay, Jim, good to see you, and I'm glad that we did put it together.
Yeah, exactly.
There's definitely a missing link in our conversation.
No worries.